Blog Talk Radio.
From the Blog Talk Radio studio in the heart of Hudson County, folks, you know it's always in Union City, New Jersey. Insider NJ proudly brings to you Politically Direct, and I am the professor, Fernando Uribe. I want to welcome you all here on the 6th of August, the year 2020. And my goodness, ladies and gentlemen, what a year it's been. We're just trying to chug along, making the most of it each and every day. And, of course, I want to thank you all for listening and from wherever and however you may be doing so throughout the Garden State and, of course, throughout the good old U.S. of A. Now, you can write to the show's inbox at any time, which is politicallydirectnj@yahoo.com. Once again, if you have a suggestion for a guest or a topic coming up, love to hear from you, politicallydirectnj@yahoo.com. Just a special programming note for all of you. We do have one more episode after this week, and we'll be off for summer break. Folks, you know, I always like to take a couple of weeks off at the end of the summer and sort of recharge my batteries as we approach the fall. And certainly, you know, it will be campaign season, and people obviously will be back from their sort of summer mindset. I know it's not been the most ideal summer under the circumstances, but, you know, again, we appreciate you tuning in here on Blog Talk Radio and on via Insider NJ every week. And certainly, again, we'll be having one more episode next week, the 13th of August. And, of course, then we'll have a break until after Labor Day. So, again, appreciate that. And appreciate you being a fan of the podcast each and every week. Again, write to the show, politicallydirectnj@yahoo.com. I do answer my emails promptly, and I do make a point to get back to you as soon as possible. So do write to the show. Love to hear from you. Don't forget to follow the show on Instagram, ladies and gentlemen, at PoliticallyDirectNJ. And, of course, you can follow me also on my own personal Instagram, at Professor Fernando Uribe. I know many of you enjoy my Instagram stories, some political humor, some memes, sports, pro wrestling, everything else. So definitely check me out there when you can. And also hit me up on Twitter, at Professor F. Uribe. And for all you Facebook subscribers, please go to the official page for Politically Direct. Like it, of course, and tell your friends to do the same. Now, I do want to hear from you tonight at some point, you know, at some point, folks, you know, when you can email the show or, again, message me on any of the aforementioned social media links. Love to hear from you. Shoot me a DM when possible. It's always good to hear what you like about the show and what you don't like about the show. And, again, that's how I keep the show flowing here every week on Blog Talk Radio. And don't forget that this podcast is brought to you by Insider NJ. Now, make sure you check out Insider NJ by going to www.insidernj.com for the best coverage of the political scene anywhere in the city of New Jersey. Do check it out. And once you're on it, upper right-hand corner, you'll see the subscribe button. Click on it, and you're automatically enrolled in the morning intelligence briefing. So you know what? When you have a chance, please click on there. Don't forget to like Insider NJ on Facebook, and, of course, follow them on Twitter. And what can I say? It's the best journalism anywhere in the city of New Jersey, folks, with our award-winning columnists. It starts with our editor-in-chief, Max Pizarro, as well as Jay Lasseter, Fred Snowflack, Alan Steinberg, and many, many more. So you know what? When it comes to the best journalism anywhere in the Garden State, nobody does it better than Insider NJ. Again, www.insidernj.com. Don't forget to start and end your day with Insider NJ. And as a reminder, ladies and gentlemen, the opinions and views expressed here and every week on Politically Direct are mine and mine alone. They do not represent those of Insider NJ, the management, the journalists, the staff, or our sponsors. Well, folks, again, as we know, we are in August, and normally under the, you know, most circumstances every summer, it's a very different feel on the show. Since we started this podcast in January of 2018, you know, we take pride in having wonderful guests on each and every episode. But certainly this summer, it's been challenging to say the very least because of the current pandemic. But it hasn't stopped us from having exclusive guests all throughout 2020. And, of course, we have a great guest coming up in just a moment. But I just want to take this opportunity, folks, real quick to sort of give a shout-out also to another media project that I take considerable pride in, and that is Real Talk with Eyes on NJ. And without question, ladies and gentlemen, you know, when we think about the impact that independent media has right now in our current political climate, I can't say enough really about the hard work of the management at Eyes on NJ. Shout out to my bosses, Jordan Komowitz and John Edmonds, the fourth, who worked diligently every week to make sure that Real Talk with Fernando Uribe continues in such a way that is, impactful and attention-seeking. And that's what we do every week. And, you know, without question, I have to say that I am immensely grateful to the audience more than anything who continued to watch the program live on Monday nights when it streams at 7 p.m. via www.eyesonnj.com/real-talk. Again, that's www.eyesonnj.org/real-talk. And, you know, it's something that when I started this project, folks, in June 1st, it was quite the challenge. And this is an idea that I was marinating on for some time, going back to the end of last year. And I felt that with everything going on with my media projects, that I wasn't sure if it was able to take off. But I know that during this pandemic, one of the things I've learned, I think, is A, to recharge my batteries, which I've been able to do. But I felt also that I owed it especially after the passing of my grandmother on May 18th. And I'll tell you, to have that happen, you know, the day after my birthday, I think was still, it's still very shocking to me, to say the very least. And we all process grief differently. And I knew that starting this project would be a great distraction, considering the circumstances. And the fact that we're still home right now in New Jersey, while Governor Murphy has lifted some restrictions on outdoor dining and outside overall, you know, folks, by and large, you know, we're still home every day. A lot of us are not back to work yet. I don't go back to work until September when classes resume all online at BCC. But I knew that in the meantime, what better opportunity than to try to launch Real Talk? And I know in the weeks leading up to June 1st, I put an enormous amount of pressure on myself with this project because I felt that A, Eisen and Jay is very reputable, and B, with other forms of media out there right now, I mean, there aren't, you know, sort of like the traditional shows that we think of, you know, we think of NJTV, we think of, you know, excellent journalists, and of course, the dean of journalism, what I would call in the state of New Jersey, Michael Aaron with his shows, Reporters Roundtable, Off the Record, you know, On the Record, excuse me, with Michael Aaron. But those shows have been, you know, pretty much in hiatus since the pandemic. And we know Steve Adubato, who's another fixture on NJTV, has been doing his show sort of sporadically. And there aren't just a lot of shows that are streaming every week live. And I thought, hey, you know what? There's as good chance as any to jump into this and see what we got. And I'll tell you, it was a pleasant surprise. And since June 1st, I mean, we've been getting crazy traffic. I mean, going back to the month of June, I mean, I'm looking at numbers here that I was extremely pleased with. I mean, we had over 13,000 plus views for the month of June, to say the very least. And I said, all right, it's great. You know, let's keep it up here. You know, let's continue. Let's make sure this isn't an anomaly and a flash in the pan, right? Let's make sure we sort of follow it up with a strong July, and we did. We had over 15,000 plus views for the month of July. Now, of course, it helps when you have wonderful guests, such as, you know, State Senators Michael Testa, and, you know, without question, you know, Joe Panaccio as well, an integral guest on the show, State Assemblyman Christopher DePhillips, one of my first guests on the program, ACLU Executive Director here in New Jersey, Amol Sinha. And without a doubt, folks, you know, having Ian Smith, who has been in the news cycle for months now, if you've been following his story and you've been following his struggles, you know, with what's going on, I can't say enough about what he's trying to do, you know, currently against Governor Murphy, what he's doing to represent small businesses right now. I would argue is the best thing I can think of right now. And, you know, having him on and having others on without question has been a blessing for the show. And we'll continue again with great guests. We got great guests coming up for the month of August, and we're scheduling for September. So I have to say that, you know, even during this pandemic, the ability to have, you know, focus and a drive, I think, is a quality that not many have. And I have to say that it's, you know, during these challenging times, so our ability to, you know, be able to, you know, focus ourselves on a project that means a lot to us, I think says a lot about where we are as people and where we are as individuals. So I think without a doubt, we have to keep moving forward. And in this pandemic, it has to be, you know, without a doubt, folks, something that, you know, I'm hoping that I can, you know, and it's something that to me is, you know, just something that I'm really proud of, and I couldn't do it without the hardworking staff, Eisen and Jay, and without question, It's something that, you know, I'm continuing to really, really, you know, put so much of my energy into right now. And, you know, again, without the hard work and dedication of Jordan Komowicz and John Edmonds, again, the success of the show wouldn't be possible. But it's more so because of you, the audience. And the same thing with this podcast as well. And it's something that, you know, it's, you know, listen, I can't say enough about the loyal audience I have here with Insider NJ. And as we all know that I'm going to be biased here without question. I would argue that Insider NJ is the, I think the gold standard of journalism in New Jersey. I know there are other online media, you know, publications and websites and nothing against them. You know, I read a lot of them to get an idea of what's going on here in the Garden State, whether it's NorthJersey.com or the Shore News Network, or NJ.com, of course. But when it comes to consistent columns, breaking news, getting those scoops that other journalists are not getting, it's hard to argue, folks, that Insider NJ isn't leading the pack and has not been leading the pack since 2017, when they started. And to say that I'm proud of this team and I'm proud to be a part of this team would be an understatement. Without question, I know that I oftentimes give my boss a considerable headache. And a shout out to Pete Onelia, the general manager at Insider NJ, and a guy that, you know, is a great boss to work for. And, you know, listen, do I sometimes make him scratch his head? Do I sometimes give him fits? Of course. But he's a gentleman. I think he does a great job in hiding it and not sort of blowing up at me and screaming at me with where I think other bosses might do that. But I really am grateful at freedom he gives me on this program to host it every week, you know, via Insider NJ and on Blog Talk Radio. And, you know, without question, again, the creative freedom that I get with Eyes on NJ as well in trying to further the importance of independent media. Because, you know, we're not owned by some big corporation. We're not beholden to specific advertisers. I mean, we are the epitome of independent media here in New Jersey, folks. And to be able to have this program and make it a success in the short amount of time that it's been on the air, I think it speaks volumes, really, to you, the audience, that you're hungry for you know, something different than what you're seeing in traditional media. I think we see it all the time, for example, on NJTV. And listen, I'll go on record and say that, you know, I don't always have the highest opinion of people on NJTV. Like, you know, when we talk about David Cruz, for example, you know, he's a guy that I've had my run-ins with personally. And listen, it is what it is. I mean, I think whether it's testosterone or the male ego or two alpha males that just don't want to like each other, it's fine. But I'd venture to guess that for a guy who has not been in this business very long, like me, that being a journalist, I think, is something I take with considerable pride. Now, by day, you know, obviously, you know, what pays my bills is being an educator, working, you know, in academia. But I'll tell you, I take a lot of pride in being a journalist and providing a different type of opinion journalism that you don't really hear anywhere else in the state of New Jersey. And that's something I think that goes without saying about sort of the notion of what people are hungry for and what people are looking for when it comes to independent media here in the state of New Jersey. Question, especially here on the podcast, what we've been doing for 2+ years now. Well, I mean, we're entering year three now. And we started in January 2018. And even during this pandemic, folks, we have not taken a break here. We have stuck to our guns. We have brought you the exclusive guests that other people do not get on their podcast. And there's another the fact that there aren't that many podcasts in New Jersey like this one anyway. So that's something I would argue that is another thing that I take considerable pride in. because of what it means. So all I can say is I can thank you all for how dedicated you've been to this podcast here on, you know, with insidernj.com/podcast. And also, of course, how dedicated you've become to Real Talk with Fernando Uribe on Monday nights via EyesNNJ. Folks, you know what? It's my pleasure right now to welcome to the show one of those exclusives. And again, as I mentioned before, I bring you an exclusive that nobody else does in the state of New Jersey here, not just on social media, but also in broadcast media. He is the distinguished chairman of the NJGOP right here in the Garden State. He's a good friend of mine, and I'm glad to have him back. Mr. Doug Steinhardt joins us here today on Politically Direct. Mr. Chairman, how are you?
I'm doing well, Fernando. It's wonderful to hear your voice. How you been?
I've been great. Staying busy, staying productive. Just trying to, make it day by day, Mr. Chairman, here in 2020. It's been a crazy year. I would never thought when we celebrated New Year's and we thought, hey, it's a new decade. We got so much to look forward to, and it's been a challenge. How are you and your family?
Thank you for asking. That's very kind. And I was going to ask the same thing of you. Everyone's healthy and safe, thank goodness. And I hope you as well.
Yeah, definitely. Definitely. We're trying to stay healthy and happy and positive in what is proving
good
to be a challenging year.
And still working, I hope.
Yes, absolutely. Yes. I mean, I go back to work now in September when the fall semester begins at BCC. So
yep.
Not happy about the virtual learning aspect of it. But, you know, hey, I'm happy to be working. So that's what matters most. Mr. Chairman, I have to tell you, it's great to have you on here. You're always very transparent with me here on the show. And I think it's one of the reasons I bring you on. Because you don't do a lot of these interviews. And I feel very honored and privileged that you take the time to come on the show and to talk with me about what's going on in New Jersey. But more importantly, what's going on with the Republican Party. Because it seems
sure
that right now, again, being the minority in both chambers of the legislature, it has to be so suffocating for legislators that are trying to battle what seems to be what I've argued is irresponsible spending for almost 20 years now, if not 25 years now. And I think
yep
the current battle that we're undergoing in the Garden State, I think, epitomizes the disconnect that exists in Trenton. For our audience that isn't aware, Mr. Chairman, right now, where do we stand in terms of, never mind the budget in October, but what the state is looking to do right now when it comes to borrowing because of our current economic climate due to the pandemic?
Yeah, and you raise a really good point, Fernando. A lot going on. And look, just because we might be in the minority party doesn't mean we need to be silenced. Doesn't mean we should be bullied into a corner by people that don't agree with us. To the contrary, I think we've developed a great message, a strong message. We've been vocal. And most recently, we filed two lawsuits just within the last couple of months. The first was a suit challenging the governor's overreach as relates to the issuing of 170 some at this point executive orders since this COVID crisis started. But it really went to the heart of his picking economic winners and losers, designating which businesses were essential and which were non-essential, who could make a living and who couldn't. It defined a logic to a lot of us that you couldn't apparently catch COVID standing in line at a Walmart, but you could if you wanted to go to some mom and pop grocery store or some mom and pop store in your neighborhood. You couldn't catch COVID riding around in a car with a handful of friends, but you could if you wanted to go walk around outside or on a public beach or at a park, although that subsequently got reversed. You couldn't catch COVID doing certain things, but you could if you wanted to sit in a pew at church. And last but not least, you couldn't catch it if you wanted to buy something. You could catch it buying something from a mom and pop store on a boardwalk, say, down at the Jersey Shore. But if you walk two blocks inland, you couldn't catch it going to a Walgreens to buy the same thing. So, we filed that lawsuit because we thought it was important just to stand up for the 1.3 million people in New Jersey that were unemployed and the businesses that were shuttered up and down the state. The appellate division took that case right away. You're allowed to appeal an executive order directly to the appellate division, so we did that. We asked for an emergent hearing. The appellate division denied us that opportunity, so the case is still pending. It'll still be heard, and we're going to pursue it to fruition, if not to challenge the issuance of these orders and the governor's decisions in this context, but to, if nothing else, to make sure that it can't happen again. But most recently, and I think the lawsuit you're referring to, especially as relates to budget, is the suit over the governor's $9.9 billion illegal borrowing and property tax scheme. I assume that's the one you're talking about, and I'm happy to kind of get in the weeds if you're interested.
Yes, absolutely.
Okay, so look, the Constitution is really what's at issue, and it is the fact that under the New Jersey State Constitution, you can't bond or borrow money for operational expenses without voter approval, unless the state can establish that there's some sort of an emergency warranting that. And then even then, in the 2004 decision in Lance versus McGreevy, the state Supreme Court ruled that borrowed funds are not revenue for the purposes of balancing the budget. So against that backdrop, the state took this broad brush approach to everyday exceptions in the Constitution, in effect declaring that an emergency, in this case the COVID-19 pandemic, gives them carte blanche to do whatever they want to. And in this case, that included circumventing voters and really trampling the state constitution. As I said, generally speaking, bonding for operational expenses requires voter approval. The idea is not to leave future generations to leave future generations, you know, at the will and whim of current administrations and paying debts for current administrations. And it also limited to a single purpose, whatever the bonds were issued for. For example, bonding to build a bridge, or bonding to build, you know, a widget or a stadium, whatever the case may be. So, you know, those were the types of premises that we were dealing with. So fast forward, Governor Murphy, the legislature passes this COVID Emergent Bond Act and says that effectively they could borrow whatever they want, whenever they want, in almost whatever amount they want. And the only safeguard that we were given as taxpayers was this four-person committee, also of four Democrats, that would decide, you know, on the expenditure and whether it would be issued. So you had two issues going into court yesterday, the revenue side and the expenditure side. And on the expenditure side, there was this question of anticipated versus unanticipated expenditures, that you can get help for some, but you can't get help for others. And once an expenditure becomes anticipated or goes away, it's effectively over. And I got to be honest, Fernando, we walked into court yesterday, you know, Democratic state governor, Democratic state legislature, Democratic, you know, court system, judiciary, not particularly optimistic, although I felt really strong about the arguments that we put together. And we had assembled a great team of plaintiffs, a woman from Ocean County, a woman from Mercer County, two representatives of the legislature, Hal Wurst from Sussex County, Assemblyman Hal Wurst, Senator Declan O'Scanlan from Monmouth County, and of course the NJGOP, and, you know, filed our suit. Assemblyman Weber, Assemblyman Cittarelli had filed a motion to intervene. Their motion to intervene had been denied, but they were granted permission to file an amici brief, which they did. So Mike Testa, who was representing the five named plaintiffs, and Mark Sheridan, who was representing the denied interveners, we were all able to collaborate. We were able to work together, and the work that we ultimately submitted, I think, really spelled out a strong case. And that became clear as the oral argument unfolded Wednesday. I don't know if you had a chance to watch it. Hopefully you did. Hopefully some of your listeners did. Yep.
I did a little bit, yeah.
Good. So, you know, it started with the justices kind of grilling Senator Testa, grilling Mark Sheridan, and then we kind of got into this deep dive on the whole concept of anticipated versus unanticipated expenditures. And, you know, the court kind of took a different tone. And by the time the DAG got around to arguing her case, it became very clear that the court was now honed in on this whole expenditure issue. And, you know, they got into acquiring how is the state planning to spend the money. If it's a COVID emergency, what are the COVID-related expenses? And what are the limits on those COVID-related expenses? And I think when the DAG indicated that there were none, if they wanted to build a stadium, and there was a specific question about this, does that mean you could build a stadium if you want to? Does that mean you could pay the debt service on, you know, old debt? Her response was yes, and I think the justice has really balked at that. She said there were no limits. They could spend the money on whatever they wanted to. In fact, when the court pressed the DAG as to where the line, shouldn't a line be drawn, and if it's so, where would you draw that line on expenditures? I think my favorite quote from the case was she said, I can't draw the line, but wherever it is, we're on the right side of it. So very cryptic, very nondescript, and unfortunately very problematic, I think, from the state. So, you know, that's where we're at today. We're waiting for a decision. I'd like to think that it'll be handed down sometime next week, but I feel very optimistic about where we are, about our defense of, you know, New Jersey's middle-class families here. You know, for the state, this is simply about, you know, carte blanche access to money. Meanwhile, you got 1.3 million people unemployed, shuttered businesses from north to south, and families literally sitting around their tables, Fernando, you know, almost every night trying to figure out if their work's going to be open. Are they going to have a job to go back to? You know, are they going to be able to make ends meet, pay their mortgage, pay a tuition payment, pay their rent? So, you know, a lot of things going on right now, and I'm happy that we were able to file this suit and hopefully speak on behalf of 9 million other New Jerseyans that think government has to live within its means, just like we're all asked to every day.
Well, I'll tell you something, Mr. Chairman. When you talk about the phrase living within your means, I mean, that's just, again, I don't like to be overly partisan on the program, but that concept is foreign in Trenton. I mean, I'm talking about going on almost 25 years now. And I talk about this constantly, not just here on the show, but on my other show with Eyes on NJ on Monday nights. People get on my case when I sort of use this inflammatory type of and bombastic language and say, you know, it's liberal policies that are destroying states. So when people talk about blue states and blue cities and why they're such – well, I can't use the word here. I mean, my insider NJ boss want me to keep the show PG. It's like blank holes, you know.
Yep.
I'll call them disasters. I'll call them disaster areas. But the reason I think that a lot of people like myself, you know, go to town on blue states and blue cities is because of liberal policies. And part of liberal policies is just reckless spending. And that has been synonymous for Trenton for years now. Now, let me be fair, because I know a lot of Democrats that are responsible in the legislature. I mean, where I live in Hudson County, my state senator, Brian Stack, is one of those moderate-type Democrats. He doesn't want to go and spend. But unfortunately, he's overrun by others in the legislature, in both chambers, that just think it's like, well, you know, they're almost like kids when they go to college and they get their first credit card. But it seems like they haven't grown up and they're still spending. And they're sort of expecting someone to sort of say, oh, just pay my credit card bill. And the problem is that the parents in this case are the taxpayers. And I think this is where we get frustrated, Mr. Chairman, because – and I'm glad that the NJGOP is not staying quiet. I'm glad that Republican legislators and conservatives too, like State Senator Testa, State Senator Panaccio, and others are coming out and really being emphatic about this. But it just seems like – God, like the deck is stacked here so badly that it really just makes you frustrated, right?
Well, and it does. And you know what? I realize that, you know, it's a nonpartisan show, and I apologize. I get my partisan hat on.
No,
I get up on my soapbox sometimes.
You're
right about this. At least this is what I hear you say. You know, living within your means, you know, wanting to take care of your family, you know, simply wanting to live safely and securely in a home you can afford, in a state you can afford to live in, those aren't partisan things. That affects everybody. And, you know, I think for government, it's easy to spend other people's money. But, you know, in a state like New Jersey, with a governor like Phil Murphy in the front office, I just think that the man is so out of touch. He doesn't understand what that means. He doesn't understand the plight that small business owners in this state are going through. He doesn't understand the plight that, that, you know, millions of unemployed New Jerseyans are going through. It's just always asking people to give more. You know, we don't have enough to pay for it, so corporations can pay more. We don't have, so now as a result, we have the highest corporate tax, you know, in the country. You know, we don't have enough money. Millionaires should pay more. Well, now we've got, you know, a vast exodus of people from New Jersey. We lead the country in the highest out-migration of businesses and residents. You know, we don't have enough money. Commuters can pay more, so, you know, we raise tolls. We raise the gas tax, you know, so it's just now with this $9.9 billion in borrowing, you know, we're going to need to pay that back. And one thing I don't think a lot of people appreciate, the program that the governor proposes to borrow that $9.9 billion from is actually a Federal Reserve program. And under that Federal Reserve program, you have to pay that money back. The state has to pay that money back in 3 years. I think I'd be willing to bet you a can of Coca-Cola, Fernando, that the state is not going to pay that $9.9 billion back in 3 years, which means we're going to have to go out on the private market and issue bonds to borrow again. And the debt service on that over 30 years, on that $9.9 billion, is $90 billion. That's the debt that the state is looking to put on the shoulders of all the hardworking men and women of this state. And I don't think that they can afford it. And we're built right into the very language of the law is the state's ability to issue a state levied property tax to help subsidize this revenue shortfalls to pick up the payments associated with issuing that debt. It is the intellectual economic equivalent of living off of our credit cards. And, you know, we all know what happens when you do that. And, you know, we are on the brink of an economic abyss, not for the reasons that Governor Murphy points to, but because we have a governor that is unwilling to roll up his sleeves and make hard economic choices. Instead, he chooses to pander to public sector labor union bosses and, you know, dole out sweetheart deals to public sector labor union bosses because those 400,000 voters are his base. Meanwhile, the private sector is being forced to bear virtually 100% of the burden of this economic shutdown. And let's not forget, you know, state government is still sitting on billions of dollars, 90-some percent of the money that's been given to the state of New Jersey by the federal government that should be doled out to, you know, small businesses and struggling families still sits in the state's coffers, hoping that they're able to use it to balance the state's budget. So, you know, the state right now is wrought with problems and with perils, and we have a governor that just has no plan to make it right. And unfortunately, as a result, you know, we've seen the casualties of that weak leadership and bad judgment on nearly a daily basis. And, you know, don't get me started on the 6,800 or so dead veterans and seniors in the state, 600 and some long-term care facilities and nursing homes as a result of, you know, just some cold and callous decisions that have come from the governor's office over the course of these last 5 months.
Oh, absolutely. And we'll get to that in a moment because I really want to sort of, you know, pick your brain about that, Mr. Chairman. But
sure.
But getting back to a point you just made now, and it's astounding to me that I think part of a serious problem here in New Jersey, and I talked about it at the onset of the program here, is the importance of media and talking about these issues. And one of the things that I take pride in as being independent media is not acquiescing to Trenton or not acquiescing to a party per se and just sort of speaking my mind and really discussing issues that matter to everyday New Jerseyans. And I would just argue that, you know, we're seeing the economic collapse of the state for some time. And I found it really funny. I think a few weeks ago when I was watching the news cycle, I remember that the governor went to the president's, you know, golf estate down the shore. I think came in the first lady, met with the president for dinner. I mean, I would love to have been a fly on the wall for that, like just to sit there and watch that conversation.
Sure. Yep.
where the governor was probably trying to tell the president, listen, we need, you know, we need federal bailout money or we need the federal government to bail out New Jersey. And I just laughed and I said, wait a minute, whether it's Governor Murphy or across the river in Cuomo or New York, I'm like, you know what? Good. Like, don't bail out these states. like kind of force them to kind of buckle their pants up like adults and like spend responsibly. And I just, and I laugh when I'm looking at my social media feed saying, oh, how irresponsible of the president or the U.S. Senate or Senate Majority Leader Mitch McConnell out of Kentucky to not want to explore. I wouldn't want to bail out these states either. I mean, I get it. I mean, I know it's sort of like cut your nose to spite your face, but right now it's just like, you know, where does the responsible spending end? Like, I don't understand why those in Trenton are so tone deaf. Like, liberal policies and this tax and spend mentality that is pervasive in Trenton is dooming us. And I don't understand when I see a 67% approval rating. I mean, I get it, and we can get to, you know, what his response has been to COVID from the beginning to now and why people sort of view him so in a favorable manner. 67% is really high for me. Like, I'm thinking, like, are they polling his cousins? Are they polling his staff? Are they polling family? Like, who are they polling? Because I tell you right now, no. It's mind-boggling to me that people aren't up in arms more about this governor.
Well, and look, I think what we all have to appreciate and what's being polled, you know, they're not asking the tough questions. You know, they're asking about response to the COVID health portion of the crisis. And I think what's difficult to poll and what you're not hearing is what happens when the health crisis is over. And I think you and I would both agree that, Fernando, at some point we round the corner. You know, originally it was flatten the curve, you know, and you know, then it was, you know, hospital admissions, you know, then it was, you know, the rate of infection ratio. So the end zone constantly keeps moving, so the emergency keeps getting protracted. But at some point, I think you and I would both agree that the health crisis is averted, but the economic crisis won't be. And that's something that you can't poll today. I think Governor Murphy's in for a rude awakening, because the New Jersey that I see, you know, when I'm walking up and down the street every day, you know, I challenge you to pick any street in New Jersey, talk to anyone you see, and not find someone that hasn't been adversely impacted by some of the governor's policies. You know, find me someone who isn't or doesn't know somebody that's unemployed or still hasn't been able to get their benefits. Find somebody that didn't have to spend, you know, hours in line at the Motor Vehicle Commission because the governor dropped the ball in getting MVC reopened. Fernando, I was one of those guys. My son got his turn 17 during the middle of the COVID crisis. When Motor Vehicle opened, we were able to go on Monday and get his driving test done. But Motor Vehicle was closed that day for furloughs. So we went to the Flemington Motor Vehicle Agency that next Tuesday and got there at 7:00 in the morning and found ourselves about 500 people deep in line. So we got to a handful of people before the door when Motor Vehicle closed its doors at 4:30 and weren't able to get in. And as my son and I sat there talking, and we said, you know what, we're going to have to do this again tomorrow, so we might as well just bite the bullet. And you know what, he and I spent the night there. We went home, we grabbed sleeping bags, we were back by 9 p.m. that night, and we were already the fifth kid in line because a couple other people apparently had the same idea. So we camped out at Motor Vehicle in Flemington. By 2:00 in the morning, Fernando, the line already wrapped around the building. By 6:00, it was already out to Route 31. And I would bet you that by 8:00, when it opened, the line already stretched down Route 31, 100 yards, with people waiting to get into the motor vehicle office. No foresight given by the governor on that front. You know, we talked briefly about nursing homes. We've talked about businesses remaining shuttered, restaurants not being allowed to open. You know, the governor's policies are literally tearing apart New Jersey's families. They're killing New Jersey's jobs. Our children can't afford to find jobs here. Our parents and grandparents can't afford to retire here. You know, that's the New Jersey that I see. Those are the people that I hear when I'm making my way around the state. And I haven't spent a lot of time sitting home. We spent a lot of time bouncing around from county to county, helping build up the Republican Party and identify people that are equally frustrated with what's been going on with Trenton, not just for the last, you know, 2.5 years with the governor, with Governor Murphy in office, but the last nearly 30 years with Democrats in control of the state legislature.
That's fair. And we'll definitely get back to, you know, what's going on in Trenton in a moment, Mr.
Sure.
Chairman. But you bring up sort of
sure.
the progress of the Republican Party. And I know you read the news feeds and I get stuff mailed to me all the time. And, you know, I get bombarded with text messages and just like you do. And I got to ask you, because a few people reached out to me this week and said, hey, listen, whenever you get the chairman on, do me a favor and press him on this, because I know that when you talk to your guests, you're always fair and balanced when you have conversations. But I think it's important to sort of talk about this. And, you know, Mr. Chairman, I would argue that, you know, statewide, I know that I talk to a lot of people, obviously not as much as you do, but I talk to enough people that give me a sense of where both parties stand, I think, with regular New Jerseyans. And I think with those that identify as Republicans here in New Jersey, there's a bit of frustration about what's going on. Obviously, we know being in the minority party in both chambers of the legislature, but more so, obviously, when it comes to registrations. And it seems like there are some Republicans. Yeah, and it seems like there are some Republicans statewide that are kind of being very vocal about the state of the NJGOP. And I'm sure that it's a name that you've come that's come across your desk or across your phone. But it's Sean Golden, and he's the chairman in Monmouth County. He's also simultaneously the county sheriff. It seems that, you know, Mr. Golden has been vocal in recent weeks about voicing his displeasure about the direction of the NJGOP. A, I mean, have you had conversations with him about this? And B, are any of his accusations correct?
Well, look, a couple things. First, you know, we've got 21 great counties, and we want every one of them to be successful. You know, since we've been chairman, we've, like, seen control flip in Salem County, 2019 was our best statewide election cycle as Republicans in 28 years, flipping the first legislative district with some guys that you know, Senator Mike Pesta, Assemblyman McClellan, Assemblyman Simonson. You know, we were able to hold serve in LD8 in Burlington, in LD21 with Nancy Munoz, John Bramnick, in LD25, Brian Bergen, Laura Dunn, you know, now Senator Bucco. So, you know, A lot of good things happening on that front. You know, in terms of state party generally, you know, when I became chairman of state party 2.5 years ago, we had 64 active donors at state party. 64. You know, as I sit here talking to you today, we've grown that number to over 3,600 active donors now. Our fundraising has increased almost every quarter since we've been here. We've grown our donor list. We've grown our email lists. We've met and exceeded, you know, our social media growth expectations for the year already, and we're only halfway through it. Made more than 3.2 million social media contacts just last year alone. In terms of registrants, you know, we've watched the gap grow between Democrats and Republicans statewide, but it is growing slower than it ever has. You know, after losing 108,000 registered Republicans over the last 25 years, going back to 1995, we've actually added 113,000 new registered Republicans back in just the last 2 years alone. So, you know, the party's growing. We're spending time running huddle-ups, bouncing around from county to county. You know, I don't get paid for that. I don't take a salary. I still max out as a federal donor to state party every year and don't ask for, you know, reimbursement for a mile or a hotel room or a meal. And I don't take a paycheck for doing it. I do it because I enjoy it. And two, and you know what, the COVID crisis really drove this home for me. But, you know, having two kids that are 17 and 22 years old now, and, you know, having to spend the last 5 months communicating with clients and friends and family members over Zoom and Skype and FaceTime, and, you know, having my daughter a semester ago spend a semester overseas, and she and I talked about it quite a bit then. But, you know, I don't want to be a parent or grandparent that's got to spend the rest of his life isn't his kids and grandkids on his cell phone or in a Zoom meeting because my children can't afford to buy a house in New Jersey, or they can't afford to find a job here or start a life here. You know, so I think family is something that's worth fighting for. And, you know, on that note, I would say that I think we've come a long way in developing our a Republican family and building a strong Republican family here over the last couple of years, and especially over the last 2.5 years. You know, insofar as you know, Sean's personal opinions, you know, I can only say that I was down there in February. We had a great event in February. You know, shot him some messages in the intervening months and didn't hear back from him. You know, over the we've been running huddle ups over the last 2 years or so since I've been chairman. You know, think of about like the town halls that the governor used to do, but you know, running these I call them huddle ups because I'm an old football player, right? So you know, running these meetings in legislative districts and counties around the state, and you know, we've made some outreach over the last couple of months into Monmouth to do that there like we've been doing other places and haven't gotten responses back from them at all. So I'm assuming a lot of that has to do with them just being busy there. But, you know, I mean, I know State Party last year invested well over $100,000 in mail just in Monmouth County alone. And we do that in counties up and down the state. So, you know, we've got a lot going on. We do it everywhere. It's indiscriminate. We are focused now on making sure that we can plug resources into not just defending our congressional candidates in CD2, Jeff Van Drew, and CD4, Chris Smith, who's one of the reasons why I was a little late jumping on the phone with you today, because had Congressman Smith's chief of staff or you know staffer in the office with us today just checking boxes and dotting I's and making sure that they have all the resources they need going into the election cycle. But, you know, we also have four targeted pickup districts statewide that the RNC and NRCC have targeted. CDs 3, if I'm going south to north, CDs 3, 7, 11, and 5, Burlington County and South Ocean County. CD 7 is Tom Kane. 3 is Dave Richter. 7 is Tom Kane running against Tom Malinowski. You know, kind of runs the 78 corridor. CD 11 is Rosemary Becky against Mikey Sherrill, which is the bulk of Morris County and a little Essex. And then, of course, CD 5 is Frank Pallotta running against Josh Gottheimer, which covers northern Warren County, all of Sussex, and western Bergen County, and a U.S. Senate race to get involved in. And, you know, I know there are some observations made related to that, but the fact of the matter is that State Party isn't allowed to get involved in primaries, and the primary, even though we had a voting day on July, you know, we didn't have vote tallies for weeks after. So, you know, that wasn't a race that we could weigh into one way or another. But now that, you know, we're getting into August and working our way toward a November general with about 90 days left, we're invested in the success of every one of those candidates. So look, you know, we continue to put on what we think is a great program, running a strong party and putting the party's interests above any individual county and any individual for that matter. And, you know, our messaging continues to be solid and strong. I was proud of the work that we did yesterday in front of the Supreme Court, you know, against the governor's borrowing. And we'll continue to do all the things that we've been doing up until today that I think have helped us do what I said I was going to do 2.5 years ago. And I think you and I talked about this the last time you were kind enough to have me on your show. And that's just, you know, rebuild, rebrand, reengage. That's what we've been doing for 2.5 years. That's what we're going to keep doing going forward. And, you know, the state party that we have, I think is as active a state party as most people will have seen or been involved in a really long time. And, you know, if you disagree with me, Fernando, I'd certainly love to hear where you think I've missed the mark. But, you know, those are a lot of the things that I think we as a group, and let me say this, you know, extremely proud of our former executive director and the team that we had when Teresa was here, and now Phil Valenciano, who joined us as the executive director in Iowa and has kind of picked up where she left off when she left at the end of last year. And I think that's the last time I saw you, as a matter of fact, was when we were all together for our third annual summit down in Atlantic City. Phil, you know, baptism by fire. Phil had to jump in and run a summit within a couple months on top of getting ready for the COVID crisis to hit. So, you know, those things have run well. And as I said, proud of the work that we've been doing.
Mr. Chairman, that's all fair. And I would argue that whenever you're the chair of whether it's a county party or a local municipal committee or the state chair, it's an overwhelming amount of work and you're never going to make everyone happy. And I know this just because, I mean, obviously it's sort of apples to oranges, but many moons ago when I was the chair of the Young Republicans here in Hudson County, which seemed like almost like a thankless job. I know how I trust me, it was, but you know, we had a membership, still do here. But the reality is that you're never going to make everyone happy. And when you have to delegate and when you have to sort of oversee an organization, not everyone's going to be on board. Everyone's going to have their own vision. Everyone's going to feel. And again, the reason I brought up Mr. Golden is because, you know, he's been very loud in the fact that he feels that, hey, you know, there's a Senate race in New Jersey. There are congressional races and that maybe the NJGOP isn't doing enough. And there are others that will agree with you and say, well, the proof is in the pudding. You know, the work has been done. It's continuing to be done for the last two and a half years, you mentioned. So not everyone's going to be happy. I think everyone's, you know, as I talk about on this program, you know, we sort of live in this society for some time where bitching and moaning is like breathing for people. And again, you know, it's something that, you know, you're not going to make everyone happy. You're not going to appease everyone in terms of strategy, in terms of fundraising, in terms of expenditures. But at the end of the day, I think it's, you know, you're trying to do the best you can with what you have. And that's not always easy. And you mentioned some races here in New Jersey, obviously the congressional races. There are some that are very competitive. I have to sort of ask you this because I know that I talk to people just statewide, just like you do, and from guests I've had, not just on this podcast, but my other shows, where, I mean, there are pockets of the state where it's not so much about the president, but it's more about there are pockets of the state that are just not happy with, you know, liberalism as a philosophy in terms of also governing, and just this sort of ridiculous cancel culture we're living in, this sort of fixation on political correctness, identity politics, that seems to embody now the Democratic Party. I know that a lot of moderate Dems that I know in New Jersey aren't happy about it, but they're scared to talk about it openly because they're afraid of getting canceled or they're afraid of getting vilified. But it just seems that there are pockets of the state where Republicans and conservatives are still popular. They're very loud and vocal, but it just seems that at the end of the day, it's just not enough because of the really, you know, the dense urban areas of New Jersey, you know, Elizabeth, Patterson, Jersey City, Trenton, Camden, you know, Newark. I mean, it just seems like a lot of New Jerseyans that are either center right, like myself, or independents, are they're overwhelmed because it just seems of like this machine politics that exists in these really blue areas of the state.
Well, yeah, look, I mean, I think politics of late has become extremely polarizing on both sides, right? So, you know, the path that and it's difficult, as small as New Jersey is, you know, New Jersey is still a very, you know, ethnically, demographically, economically diverse state. You know, I'm from that rural northwest corner of New Jersey, right? We still got mountains and rolling hills and farms, and my mom and dad still live on the same farm that my sister and I grew up on. And, you know, but you drive an hour east and you're back in your neck of the woods, Fernando, right? So you're walking around in Hudson County and Bergen County and Essex County. And, you know, I get up and make that ride periodically. In fact, I was just down there last weekend to visit my friend Senator Testa, you know, and you make the 3-hour ride down to Cumberland County. In fact, I was there yesterday with Senator Testa for oral argument in front of the New Jersey Supreme Court because it was done virtually. But, you know, you're correct in that they're difficult waters to navigate. But, you know, from my perspective, from a messaging perspective, from, you know, how we've drilled down on some of this, and I would agree with you that it can be difficult sometimes, but, you know, the message for me isn't complicated in terms of how we right the ship here. It's reducing taxes, it's relaxing regulations, it's rewarding people for hard work, and last but not least, it's respecting the Constitution, the U.S. Constitution, and the Constitution of the state of New Jersey. You know, it to me, from perspective of, you know, like where we go, how we move forward, how we message effectively, how we continue to build organizations. It's not a whole heck of a lot different than what we've been doing in the beginning. And, you know, I've made a conscious effort not to stay out of neighborhoods that people might traditionally think we don't belong, you know, that have traditionally been Democratic strangleholds, strongholds. Spending time, you know, of late in Hudson County, spending time, you know, down in Camden County, spending time in Passaic and Essex and Bergen counties, all important. You know, one thing I think is a common theme when you talk to a lot of people is they feel like the Democrats, you know, the Democrats aren't really representing their interests, and the Republicans aren't listening. So, you know, a lot of what we've been doing over the course of running these huddle ups and Zoom meetings and why we're putting as many miles as we are collectively as a staff on cars is in large part just doing a listening tour and talking to people. And, you know, what I tell people in our Republican caucus when we're speaking in places is, you know, it's okay to be a Republican in New Jersey. It's okay to be proud of your roots. It's okay to be pro-law enforcement, pro-legal immigration, pro-Second Amendment, pro-American military, pro-U.S. economy. You know, it's okay to embrace the president. It is okay to wave an American flag. And, you know, it's not something that I'm prepared to run away from. You know, it's not something that I shrink away from, you know, and it's, I know it's difficult for some people to feel like they can have that freedom to say what they want without being, you know, yelled at or berated. But, you know, I think like anything else, if you're strong, and, you know, you work hard and you do the right thing. I remember my mom and dad always telling me, you know, growing up that, you know, how hard you work and how you treat other people are two characteristics that we control ourselves, you know, that control how far you get in life. So, you know, we've brought like that hardworking work ethic to state party, and we're not going to allow ourselves to be outworked by our Democratic rivals. We might be outspent by them because they control three branches of government and have resources that we just don't have, but, you know, we're not going to let them outwork us. And, you know, we're not going to stop listening. The Democrats may, and Phil Murphy may, when you question his authority or, you know, when you disagree with his opinion, tells you to, if you don't like it, we're probably not your state. If you don't like it, you can move. In fact, I think at one point he said, if you don't like his decisions, you should go to Georgia. So, you know, that's the Democratic thought process. Ours is, mine anyway, at state party is, tell me what's on your mind. You know, let's have an intelligent colloquy. Let's talk about what we need to do to get to the next level. You know, from my perspective, you've got three things you always got to deal with, Fernando. You've got facts, you've got problems, and you've got fights. You know, facts are facts, right? They are what they are. Yeah, you just got to learn to deal with them. You know, problems, intelligent people, you know, respectful people, they can sit down at a table and we can solve problems. Problems are there to be solved. And, you know, when push comes to shove, when you can't do that, if you got to fight, you roll up your sleeves and you win. And one thing I've learned about politics in the couple of years that I've been at this is that politics ain't like the third grade. You don't get a trophy for trying. If you don't win elections, you don't get to govern. And, you know, we've all seen what 30 years of Democratic control in the state legislature is capable of. We've seen what 2.5 years of a radical liberal, left-wing liberal in the governor's office is capable of. And, you know, I think the state party that we're building, the state party that we've put out here over the course of the last 2 years is out here trying to and working toward winning elections. Because at the end of the day, we can run to court all we want and fight about changing rules. And I'm not saying that that's not something that we don't have to do from time to time. We did it over the $9.9 billion in borrowing. We did it over the governor's executive orders. We're contemplating whether or not we might have to do that over another potential all vote by mail election. But, you know, a lot of times when it comes to fighting over rules or changing the rule makers, you know, we're investing our resources in changing the rule makers. That means electing Republicans from Salem County to Sussex County, from north to south, from everywhere in between. And, you know, I think that's what the tenor of the last 2.5 years has been. And, you know, that's what it's going to be like from now until we get through this next election cycle in just under 90 days.
Now, Mr. Chairman, speaking about rolling up your sleeves and the necessity and need of winning elections, I have to ask you because I know it's been in the news cycle, and I know that last time I had you on this show, it was pre-pandemic. We know that certainly what's going on with COVID is dominating the headlines. It will certainly dominate for the rest of 2020, if not going into 2021. But we know that here statewide, we talked about the governor's sort of surprising high approval rating again, which I'm still shocked about the polling sample, but that's just because, you know, as an academic, I'm always concerned about data. But there's only one established candidate right now. It's former Assemblyman Jack Ciccarelli. I know that when he's been on this program before, I know I had him on last year, and I remember I had him on early this year. You know, by his own admission, he had said to me that in 2017, something he regretted was not jumping into the race sooner. Maybe, you know, he went back and looked at it, not the Monday morning quarterback, but he felt, hey, you know what? I think if I jumped in sooner, I might have been able to win that primary against Kim Guadagno. I think he learned from that and certainly jumped in very soon into this race. And he's declared first, and he's the only Republican right now to declare for 2021. There's certainly whispers about you, Mr. Chairman, going into 2021, whether or not running for the Republican primary, some of that interests you. I mean, it's August 2020. Not to sort of pressure on you, not to sort of suffocate you here, but, you know, there are whispers around the state that, you know, is the chairman going to jump in here? Is he interested? Is he not interested? Is it about just, you know, right now overseeing the progress of the NGGOP? Is it about trying to just get good assembly and state senate candidates on the ballot next year for 2021? There's a lot on your plate, though, Doug. And to be fair, a lot of people are probably asking today, you know, where does the chairman stand when it comes to whether or not running for governor is on your agenda, or whether or not it's in, you know, whether it's in either the rearview mirror or it's right in the road in front of you?
Sure. Look, again, not to quote mom and dad, but, you know, they're both 78 years old, and I love them dearly. And mom always said to me, you know, do a good job at something and it creates opportunities, and do a bad job at something and forecloses them, right? So, you know, the job that I'm tasked with right now and the job that I've had for the last 2.5 years is chairman of the Republican State Committee. And I've rattled off to you why I think that we've done a good job so far at rebuilding an organization that was in a pretty dark place when we took it over. But, you know, it is, and you said it, it's 2020. You're asking me questions about 2021. You know, my focus is the next 90 days. It's getting through the November general election cycle. It's making sure that we do our job and send some new Congress members, elect a U.S. senator, and help down ballot everywhere we can in the state of New Jersey. President needs 20 congressional seats to take back control of the House. There is no doubt that the road to a Republican majority runs directly through the state of New Jersey. And not to rattle them off again, but confident that we'll defend our two incumbents. And I think we have, at a minimum, the potential for 4 solid pickups. So, you know, the ability to deliver 20% of that number is exactly why the Republican National Committee and the Trump Victory Committee just announced a couple days ago that they were making a significant investment in the state of New Jersey to make sure that we could put on a victory effort and, you know, have a physical presence in all of those targeted races. But, you know, my focus is where my focus belongs. My focus is on the next 90 days and making sure that we help from the top of the ticket down. As I said before, there are families in New Jersey that are struggling. They're struggling every day to keep their businesses open, to pay their mortgages, to put groceries on the table, to figure out how they're going to send their kids to school under the current circumstances, or whether they can afford to, or how they can afford to care for them if they can't go. So, you know, that's enough for anybody's plate, and that's what's keeping me busy. And I'll wake up the day after the November election and figure out what to do next. But for the time being, you know, unless circumstances change, my focus is on making sure that I meet the responsibilities to the job that 42 state committee members unanimously reelected me to last June. And that's tending to the operations of the Republican State Party, Fernando.
Okay, fair enough. And again, I have to ask you, because a lot of people that tune into the program, and a lot of my colleagues at Insider NJ are like, hey, listen, you know, at some point, whether or not Doug jumps into this remains to be seen. He may not talk to us, but he'll talk to you. And I was like, well, he certainly will. And I know he'll be transparent with me like he's been on previous episodes. Mr. Chairman, let me ask you this, because I know you mentioned the congressional races coming up now on November 3rd. And listen, where I live up here in Hudson County, in Congressional District 8, I mean, that's just – it's never really been a winnable district for Republicans. But there are a lot of districts that are very winnable down – you know, up in certain North Jersey, Bergen County, Central and South Jersey. Right now, I mean, again, I don't want to put you on the spot, but – which races do you really feel really good about when it comes to November 3rd? I know Jeff Van Drew, the newly minted Republican, we know that the popularity that he has in his district. Obviously, we saw the turnout for the president in January when he came to Wildwood and certainly to endorse Jeff Van Drew. I know other races were interesting leading up to November, but, you know, not to put money on the table, because I only gamble during the NFL season. But which races do you think really, really have a good chance to bounce red?
Look, it's tough to handicap any of them. Let's look at the races that the NRCC has targeted. We rattled them off already. 3, 5, 7, and 11. I feel good about Jeff Andrews' ability to defend his seat. He's done a wonderful job there as a congressman, and he's well received by both Republicans and Democrats. Chris Smith and CD4 is, you know, one of the longest serving congressmen here, one of the longest serving, period, and has done a fantastic job championing the rights of victims of human trafficking, among other topics, and continues to do a wonderful job looking out for the constituents in his district in 4. After that, you know, CD3 is a district that the president won in 2016. It's still a +3 Trump district today. So, you know, David Richter running there, bringing his corporate experience to work against Andy Kim, another who was voted in the high 90 percentile with Nancy Pelosi, means that is a real pickup opportunity for us. CD7, a district that President Trump didn't win in 2016, but only lost by less than a point, is a district with Tom Kaine, you know, as the candidate. And as is the case in every election, you know, it's candidate first. And we've got great candidates, not just in the targeted districts, but great candidates running all around the state of New Jersey from the U.S. Senate down. But we've got candidates running in every one of the state congressional districts. Tom Kaine running in CD1, you know, with his work in the U.S. Senate as our Senate Minority Leader, you know, with his father as the former governor, just the Kaine family and their reputation in the state, make him, you know, a formidable opponent to Tom Malinowski, who, by the way, just today, we released a statement outlining Malinowski's prior lobbying record against stricter penalties and stricter disclosure requirements for those convicted of offenses, sexual offenses against children. So, you know, Tom's record, the fact that Tom doesn't know where he is most of the time when he's Tom Malinowski now, you know, Tom's voting record with Nancy Pelosi, his lobbying record, the fact that he doesn't know where he is most of the time when he's in his district, that he's running against the Kaine, that when he's running against the Kaine, I think mean that that's a district that we can pick up. 11, Morris County, Rosemary Becky, she is a brilliant, articulate, you know, tax attorney who understands the financial issues, not just in the district but nationally, and really poses a formidable adversary to Mikey Sherrill. Mikey Sherrill said that she was going to be independent. She was going to vote her mind. She was going to vote in line with the men and women in her district, and then turns around and runs to Washington, D.C. and aligns herself with Nancy Pelosi. Correct. Almost almost 100% of the time. And then, you know, last but not least, you jump up to CD5. Josh Gottheimer is another, you know, who says he's one thing, but when it turns around and comes time to vote, is somebody altogether different. You know, outside of those four, there are other races that I think we should be paying attention to. We have great candidates. I was in Bergen County just last week with Billy Pimpo, who's running against Frank Pallone. We've got other candidates up and down the state. You know, we were extremely influential in helping other congressional candidates make sure they get their petition circulated and get on the ballot. You know, credit to Phil Valenciano and Pierce Fraunheim. Phil's our executive director here. Pierce was the former deputy executive director who has been hired by the Trump Victory campaign to now run the Trump Victory effort here in New Jersey. But, you know, they worked hand in hand with a lot of these candidates to pick up the slack in some counties that just weren't able to offer the resources that needed to get candidates on the ballot. But as a result of their efforts, we have people running in every congressional race throughout the state. So, you know, it's difficult to put numbers on and to handicap them. I think those are the ones that people are watching most. Those are the ones that the NRCC has targeted. Those are the ones that I think that we have real opportunities to win. You know, I think everybody out there, when I look at our field of candidates, again, you know, go down to Claire Gustafson, running down in Camden and Gloucester counties. You know, Claire is a formidable candidate herself, taking on, you know, a Norcross. But, you know, she's got a great down game. She's got good people working for her. She's got a wonderful message. She's got a great following. So, you know, the difference between 18 and 20 is the president at the top of the ticket. And, you know, it's New Jersey. I get that. And we're in the coming off the throes of a COVID crisis and an economic crunch. But, you know, the president has really been a lot more measured and deliberative of late and kind of honed in on that strong America message and is working hard to build a strong economy. So, you know, I'm optimistic that with the president at the top of the ticket in 2020 and some really great candidates around the state that we can deliver some victories.
I agree with that, Mr. Chairman, and certainly, as you mentioned, yes, you're absolutely right. I mean, there is a fundamental difference, president at the top of the ticket, as opposed to 2018, when you saw that sort of blue tsunami that took over the House. But it wasn't really very surprising. As a history professor, I tell my cousins all the time, I remember the day after the election, a lot of my liberal friends on social media were all up in arms, and I said, well, listen, let's be honest. During the first term, other than George W. Bush in 2002, and President Roosevelt in 1932, guess what? The House tends to flip to the opposing party. So it's not like this great, you know, oh my God, you know, what an achievement in the history of mankind. It tends to happen. So it's not something that was like not unexpected. So I figured that, okay, that's something that's probably going to happen. It's going to be inevitable. Let's see what happens in 2020. With this blue tsunami is in office, and we have to judge them on their record. And as you mentioned, whether it's Andy Kim, whether it's Mikey Sherrill, whether it's others around the country in House districts, I mean, I think now they have a record. Now, you know, Americans and specifically New Jerseyans now have a chance to sort of decide, well, you know, is this what we want representing us in the House of Representatives? And I think it's fair to say that, you know, ultra liberals like Andy Kim and Mikey Sherrill are not those type of people I think the New Jerseyans want. I mean, we'll certainly find out. But let me ask you this, though, Mr. Chairman, because I know that New Jersey has been solidly blue for many years now. The last time it went red in a presidential election year was 1988 with George H.W. Bush. It seems like the state's 14 electoral votes, you know, are always Democrat. You know, it's always a solid blue state. But I don't see a lot of enthusiasm for Joe Biden. And I don't believe these polls. I think these polls are nonsense. I think that there isn't this enthusiasm that I would expect out of Democrats. I mean, in 2016, as much as I despised her, there were pockets of the state, blue pockets, that genuinely liked Hillary Clinton. I don't know why, but I mean, hey, whatever. But it seems that now in 2020, I don't see any enthusiasm. I have yet to see any Joe Biden bumper stickers, Mr. Chairman. I have yet to see any real enthusiasm in the Garden State for Joe Biden. I'm not saying that New Jersey's a swing state, but it doesn't seem like Democrats are going to have this overwhelming victory that they think they're going to have come November, because Joe Biden, A, doesn't know where he is half the time, B, isn't very inspiring, and C, he's catering to, you know, for a guy that's been in government for 49 years, you know, to lecture us about when government's failed you. Well, you're part of the problem, Joe. Like, you've been in government for, you know, half a century, and you haven't gotten things done. I'm sorry. And that's just the reality of it. And it just seems that, you know, the president could do a better job, and I think with his message of just showing how he can outclass Joe Biden. I think he'll do it during the debates. But I think that, you know, in parts of New Jersey, there are a lot of independents that say, you know what, I mean, I'd be happy with the president all the time, but my God, the thought of a Joe Biden presidency scares the living, you know, blank out of me.
Yeah. And look, I do believe in that silent majority. I hear it all the time. You know, you talk to people who say that they're supportive of the president. They're afraid to say anything. You know, every time Joe Biden opens his mouth of late, you wonder what's going to come out of it. You know, I think if the Democrats have their way, they'll figure out a way to make an excuse to keep Joe Biden out of any any debates with President Trump, because I just don't think he can hang through them, that he can survive them. In any time you have these head-to-head elections, you know, there are always questions of contrast and contrasting candidates. And, you know, Joe Biden, I think, leaves a lot to be desired, not just here in New Jersey and around the country. But, you know, it's good to have a new.
Okay. I hope we didn't lose the chairman. I know maybe the call dropped. I hope the chairman can call back here on Blog Talk Radio. I mean, we've been having a great conversation for almost an hour. We're about to wrap up with the chairman. I hope we can call back here on the show. Just a little bit of technical difficulties right now on the program. Folks, again, bear with us here. We're trying to wrap up here with NJGOP Chairman Doug Steinhardt. I don't know what happened there, but, you know, again, we'll just give it a few seconds here. But folks, so far, I mean, it's been a great interview with the chairman. I think we've talked a lot about what's going on when it comes to the state of the Republican Party in New Jersey, and really the state, I think, of what's going on, you know, with everything that's sort of transpiring here. Let's go back for a moment. Mr. Chairman, I don't know what happened there.
Yes.
Technical difficulties.
I thought your timer went off on me.
No, not at all, Mr. Chairman. No. I saw that the call dropped on your end, and I'm like, oh, my God, I hope everything's okay.
Yeah.
I'm sorry, Mr. Chairman, you were saying about Joe Biden's chances and really the president
of
New Jersey.
Yeah. No doubt. And I think what I was saying is I think you're going to see a concerted effort on the Democrats' part to try to keep to keep Joe Biden away from these debates as much as possible.
Sure.
I think they worry about the possibility or the prospect of him having to go head-to-head with the president. And, you know, I think the president is primed and ready to go through the next 3 months. I think where I left off was it's great to know that, you know, we have a New Jersey native at the helm of the campaign now. Bill Stepien, as you well know, was promoted to campaign manager over a week ago now. And, you know, that gives New Jersey not just a strong foothold in the Trump campaign, but, you know, we all know Bill and his capabilities as an operative, and the fact that the president and the Trump family have put that confidence in him to try to navigate, you know, through these next 3 months is a real testament to his ability.
Absolutely. Mr. Chairman, before I let you go real quick, you know, certainly the governor, I think a lot of New Jerseyans early during the spring at the onset of COVID, I know that up here where I live in Hudson County, I mean, we saw just a surge of cases in Hudson and Bergen counties collectively. We know it traveled throughout the state. Many New Jerseyans will applaud the governor for taking measures early on to flatten the curve. Again, you know, I'll give credit where it's due. It seems like it worked. The problem is that I think as we went through the rest of the spring into the summer and we started seeing COVID cases dropping dramatically, New Jerseyans are up in arms. New Jerseyans are upset about the fact that the state hasn't reopened as, you know, on a quicker level. A couple of weeks ago on this podcast and also on my studio show with Real Talk on iZNJ on Monday, I had State Senator Vin Gopal. Now, he's a Democrat, you know, in the 11th Legislative District. He's a moderate Democrat. But even he had his objections about the governor and how slow the state has been reopening. We've seen people like Ian Smith and Frank Trombetti from the Achilles Gym down in Belmar, down in South Jersey, really taking it almost seems like they're willing to die on the sword for their cause against the governor and Attorney General Gabriel Gowal. It seems like a lot of New Jerseyans now, I think, are becoming upset and tired with the governor. I know that in June he got a lot of flack, and rightfully so, where, you know, he was instructing people to stay home, and if you weren't, you would face some sort of consequences, whether it was at gatherings. Yeah, exactly. Mm-hmm. Whether it was, again, until it was Jim in Belmar, we had the young lady in Randolph, New Jersey, at the Randolph Tennis Center, who was being threatened with fines and even imprisonment. But, but there's the governor on a Sunday marching with Black Lives Matter. And, again, I don't want to really delve into that because I have my own issues about Black Lives Matter, the movement, per se, and how Marxist it is. But, you know, the governor got some flack on Sunday for walking. Yeah, he was wearing a mask, fine. But there was no social distancing, and he was marching in a protest. And then Monday, you know, he was being – even the liberal Star Ledger, which never called him out on anything, even took him to task. So I said, wow. I mean, you know, a clock is right twice a day too, I guess. And he took a lot of flack on it the very next day. And I think on Tuesday, I think he lifted some restrictions that were already in place. But it still seems that many people are urging the governor to open – more of the state. And I don't know if it's a concerted effort. I get it. You know, we want to make sure COVID cases don't spike again, but it seems like they've dropped, Mr. Chairman. And again, I'll give him credit at the onset. I think he did a good job at the onset, but now for months, New Jerseyans like myself are wondering, well, what's the goal here? Do we want to keep the state, you know, closed, half in, half out? I don't know. I think it's something that's really frustrating New Jerseyans, Mr. Chairman.
It's frustrating on a number of levels. Look, I mean, you know, in our form of government, we elect a governor, not anoint a king. And, you know, I think Governor Murphy's actions speak more of late anyway, speak more of a person who fancies himself the latter instead of understands that he was elected to be the former. The double standards are frustrating for everybody. You know, the fact that he prosecutes his own, you know, that he's prosecuting his own citizens for really exercising what are fundamental rights. And, you know, our and then meanwhile, to your point, goes out and demonstrates himself and either just changes the rules to adapt to his own behavior or points out that if it's him, it's an exception. So because he chose to be involved in it, you know, that type of behavior apparently warrants constitutional protection. But other people who wish to exercise their constitutional rights don't. You know, our government is set up to have three branches, but for the last better part of nearly 5 months, we've only had one. When you question the governor's authority, you know, he is not shy about telling people that it's his way or the highway. And we've alluded to that a little while ago earlier, that if you don't like my opinions, move. You know, I think the fact that there's been a lack of a plan, a lack of direction, a lack of any consistency are all things that are causing people. And you know, last but not least, you know, and I recognize what you say, you know, early on in the crisis. But you know what? I just think a general lack of compassion or an appearance of empathy for the folks that are unemployed, for the businesses that are closed, you know, and just a general unwillingness to listen to them. And the fact that the goal line is just constantly moving since this thing started, when we were told it was one thing, then it was something else. And, you know, then, as I said, the rate of infection, and, you know, then that continued to move, and there's just no end in sight. And I think there's no end in sight, unfortunately, for much more insidious reasons. I think it's gone from you know, a general concern for health, safety, and welfare to the governor just looking to protect his political turf, and it's just, those are all the wrong reasons, and I think that is in part why you sense the same political frustration, the same general frustration that I think so many other people are sensing as well. And then when it comes to just picking priorities, making decisions, and you know, the borrowing one is a perfect example. example. But, you know, making decisions in a vacuum by himself without taking into consideration the other branches of government, the legislature. We'll see what happens when the Supreme Court enters its decision, I assume, in the next week or so. But, you know, as I said in the beginning, you know, we elect a governor. We don't appoint a king. No one wants to feel like they're being dictated to. They want to know that their voices are being heard, that the people they've elected to represent them are listening. I don't think Governor Murphy gives that impression, and his actions certainly don't give that appearance. So, you know, we're going to continue to message hard. We're going to continue to point out his shortfalls. We're going to continue to point out where I think he's failing the residents of the state of New Jersey, and continue to make cases to elect the Republicans from northern Hudson County to southern Salem County and everywhere in between. Because as I said, I think we've got a better message. I think we've got better candidates. I think we've got an eye on the future of the state of New Jersey. And, you know, what I've seen, what I've heard, what I believe walking around listening to our folks is, you know, we're here, we're listening. And, you know, New Jersey's a unique family. And as I said, about 45 minutes ago, I believe in my heart that family's worth fighting for. That's why, you know, we're leading our team at state party the way we are. That's why I think we are electing Republicans again, because people are starting to understand that that is the case. And I will continue to dedicate myself to making this state a place where my kids can afford to live and want to live, so that I don't have to be visiting them on my iPhone or my computer sometime down the road. So, Fernando, it's always a pleasure to speak with you. Thanks for giving me so much time.
No, I appreciate it. One last thing, Mr. Chairman, real quick. I know going into 2021, there is a gubernatorial race, but every assembly seat is up for grabs, and every Senate seat is also up for grabs. Is that correct?
No, I don't believe that's the case. It's not the whole legislature again. There are some seats that are up. Don't quote me on that. But obviously, it's another exciting cycle. You know, there's going to be a lot of activity. You know, New Jersey is unique. We're one of only two states in the country that have an election every year. So, you know, there's never any rest for the political weary. It lends to the excitement that goes on around here. But, you know, because of people like yourself that are out there, you know, giving people platforms to come in and talk about things that are important to them, it makes it a lot better. It gives people a place to know that they can turn and get information that might be important to them. So I hope you'll keep doing what you're doing, and I appreciate you giving me an opportunity to spend some time with you today.
Well, Mr. Chairman, I appreciate that. And it's valuable. I appreciate the time you've given to the show today. And, again, keep up the great work. Keep up the good fight. Obviously, I know a lot of New Jerseyans are hoping that this irresponsible spending and borrowing can cease. We're hoping that the judiciary can step in and maybe, you know, put a not a Band-Aid on a puncture wound, but stitch it up completely. Let's hope. Mr. Chairman, thank you again for your time. And do us all a favor here at Insider NJ. Please, you know, plug the podcast and tell everyone you know how much you love Politically Direct. And I'm glad that you're a fan of the show, and I'm a fan of you, Mr. Chairman. Keep up the good work.
Thank you so much, Fernando. I'll speak soon. Thanks.
Have a good one. All right, folks. Great. Thank you again, Mr. Chairman. Great episode today, folks, here with the chairman of the New Jersey GOP here in the Garden State. And listen, folks, I think you can certainly set on your own what you think of Chairman Doug Steinhardt's work, certainly for the last two and a half years, as he mentioned. As the chair of the Republican Party here in New Jersey, it's a challenging job, folks. As I alluded to before, New Jersey has not gone red in a presidential election year since 1988, when George H.W. Bush defeated Michael Dukakis overwhelmingly in that election year. We know that subsequently in the next presidential cycle in 1992, Bill Clinton, then the governor of Arkansas, won the presidency. And since then, New Jersey and its 14 electoral votes have gone to the Democratic Party consistently. So we'll see what happens. As the chairman said, you know, maybe the silent majority can change that in November. Who knows? It's a tough task here, especially with a lot of the blue pockets of the state, especially in many of the urban centers. We'll see. But even on a state level, in all the districts he mentioned, whether it's congressional races or legislative races, I think the chairman made a compelling case about the fact that many New Jerseyans are not happy with the state of the Democratic Party right now, as presently constituted. Well, folks, I'll tell you, that's our show for this week. Again, if you miss any part of the broadcast, you can always check it out at www.insidernj.com/podcast. And you can also, of course, you know, download it and listen to it from any PC, Mac, smartphone, or tablet. And that's what we're doing here via Blog Talk Radio every week. And I love to hear what you have to say. So write to the show, politicallydirectnj@yahoo.com. Again, a suggestion or a topic for a guest coming up. I'd love to hear from you. I do answer my emails promptly. So write again to the show, politicallydirectnj@yahoo.com. Don't forget to follow the show on Instagram, folks, at politicallydirectnj. And also my own Instagram, at Professor Fernando Uribe. Also, hit me up on Twitter, folks. Tons of good content there each and every day. I appreciate you tuning in there to my social media pages and opining when you can. Don't forget to like Politically Direct on Facebook. And folks, without question, make sure that you check out Insider NJ by going to www.insidernj.com. The best coverage of the political scene anywhere in the state of New Jersey. Folks, no one does it better than Insider NJ. Starts with our excellent editor-in-chief, Max Pizarro, along with Jay Lasseter, Fritz Stumpf, and other great columnists. Again, the award-winning staff at Insider NJ. No one does it better, folks, in terms of covering the political scene. And it's the best journalism anywhere in the Garden State, folks. It's courtesy of Insider NJ. Don't forget to like them on Facebook. And, of course, follow them on Twitter. And once again, once you're on the website, ladies and gentlemen, upper right-hand corner, you'll see the subscribe button. Click on it, and you'll be automatically enrolled in the morning intelligence briefing. So when you're having your morning coffee, breakfast, whatever, guess what? It'll be in your inbox, and you check out all the great stuff offered to you by Insider NJ. Again, www.insidernj.com. Your day with Insider NJ. All right, ladies and gentlemen, that's our show for this week. Again, I want to thank NJ GOP Chairman Doug Steinhardt for a very illuminating and informative conversation for over an hour. Again, I know he's very busy, and I appreciate him dedicating his time to the program here today. And without doubt, you'll be able to listen to the episode in its entirety and all my episodes by going to www.insidernj.com/podcasts. That's podcast, that's plural. Don't forget. And never forget, folks, that it's real. It's here. It is Politically Direct. Good night. Hamilton, New Jersey. All my good folks in Hamilton who tune into the broadcast and certainly opine on social media. Thanks for all the love you show me. Folks, enjoy your weekend. Please, if you're out there, please party responsibly, especially if you're down the shore, wear your masks. Please practice responsible social distancing, and let's make sure that we cut COVID cases once and for all here in the Garden State. Folks, I'll see you next week here on Blog Talk Radio, and don't forget, let's keep on talking.